Kamenetsky, who is most recently the author of Bad Marie. Marcy, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Ed.
First off, I wanted to ask, this book contains quite a bit of perverse and strange behavior, and yet it's written with very straight, non-adorned or unadorned, as they use in the English language, sentences.
Right.
And I wanted to ask why you chose this approach. I mean, is telling the story straight really the best way to describe the warped human condition?
Or? I think I don't know how not to write straight. I've never been one for flowery prose or for long sentences, and I didn't make that connection together. I mean, maybe it might be, sometimes when people meet me and they've read my work, they think that I'm going to be a lot stranger in my appearance. Like,
yeah.
They think I'm going to look odd, or I'm going to be pierced, or there's going to be something off about me. And I've had people read my work and say, Marcy, you look so normal.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, thank you. But so I think that must have something to do with the telling. Like, in a way, I didn't really sit down and think of this as a perverse story. And I know that it is. And I know that Marie really shocks people, but in some ways I don't find her that strange. I feel like she's very borderline to just like everybody else.
Were there any particular moments in the book where you were writing you thought, well, this is really messed up, like, this is just beyond the pale, or were you so ensnared within this particular container of her, of this character, that such questions didn't even matter?
I think I was very much aware of the coincidences and how, in a way, they were over the top. And I just gave myself permission to do that. I thought, well, this will be fun. Like, this is a story and this is fiction. And maybe this won't happen in real life. Maybe you won't get on an airplane in France and meet the movie star that happened to be one character's former lover. And I knew that that wasn't quite real. But that wasn't a problem for me. Or I was aware of what I was doing it. But I never thought this is so messed up. I didn't think it was that messed up, which I think troubles me, like, what's wrong with me? Like, why didn't I think so? Or,
well, I mean, you have to give in to your subconscious, however strange it may be. I mean, I have the same problem when people meet me. They think I'm extremely crazy as well. So we're kind of in a similar situation here.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's interesting. I mean, I want to touch upon the coincidence because it does create possibly a problem for a reader who's looking for a plausible reality.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if you can justify the use of coincidences or convenient run-ins, because this is a work of fiction, because anything goes in fiction, because you should be aware that it's an artifice.
Yeah.
Why, do you think that verisimilitude was just not required for this particular work? Or?
Well, I think to some extent, like, there are crazy coincidences in life, and why not? Like, I mean, there goes a motorcycle. You never quite know who you're going to run into or what's going to happen, or... This is not even, like, when I was signing books at BEA, someone came up to my table and said, I want you to sign this for Alexa. And I said, okay. And at the
table. Who was Alexa?
I have no idea. It was like her cousin or her niece. But at the table next to me, somebody walked up and said, and I just overheard, we were right next to each other. She said, could you sign this book to Alexa? And it was just a different person next to me. And I just thought, how many Alexas are there in the world that other people want? And so that happened. And that's not as dramatic as reading a book in prison and then coming out and finding out that your best friend is married to that author. But but there are coincidences.
Did you make any efforts to track a third Alexa?
No. I should have done that.
I mean, maybe there was a run-in of Alexas. Maybe there are a lot of Alexas in the publishing industry. We don't
know. I stopped signing the book and I said, isn't it strange that there's another Alexa? And the woman whose book I was signing thought I was odd. She's just like, sign my book. And I kept going on about how I thought
that was
interesting.
Did you find out what her
name was? No, I didn't find out her name. Yeah.
Maybe she was Alexa. Maybe she liked to refer to herself in the third person.
Possible.
We don't know.
Yeah, you don't know. Yeah. Who's the normal people are often not so sane. Yeah.
So, but on the other hand, we are dealing with a narrative versus reality.
I know,
and while
true.
We can accept numerous coincidences, numerous associations, numerous similarities, numerous parallels, that's not necessarily going to line up neatly in a book. And in this, it seems to me, reading it, that you just kind of just didn't care.
I think I didn't care. I mean, I could put it back on you and I could ask you if that, and you could be truthful if that bothered you as a reader, or like, did you say, oh my God, she's gone too far?
Well, it did and it didn't.
Okay.
I mean, I would say that it is rather curious that your book has a lot of outsider characters who are observing the situation, and then they mostly get involved with the narrative. And I wanted to actually ask you about that. Like, there isn't a single real stranger who's looking upon all these weird characters or unusual characters or, you know, characters who came from a normal author.
Okay.
And don't just sit back and express disgust, save for that waiter, really. And I'm curious why you felt the need to pull in all these sort of side characters into the narrative like this, as opposed to just letting them just look at the situation and kind of offer some expression of disgust or expression of dismay or whatnot.
I was trying to remember who's the waiter, and he's the waiter in the French restaurant, yes. And he's very disgusted because they put all the food on the table and the cat on the table. And
yeah.
Well, I mean, when you introduce a character into a story, they have to become part of the story?
Not necessarily. I mean, if you're in a crowd, mm-hmm. and these characters are often running into crowded situations when they're not in rooms, mm-hmm. you're going to have people give them glances or expressions and the like. So to me, it was interesting that you decided to any kind of remote running with someone, immediately they become a supporting character or even like a minor walk-on character.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Like there's a scene in the bathroom in Paris where the woman walks into the bathroom and she doesn't just walk in and out. Well, they're two teenage girls. They walk in and out and they give Marie a dirty look. But then a woman in a hijab comes in and she actually helps her change Caitlin's diaper, so she becomes a character just for that scene. I don't know. I think if you put somebody into a room, you want to use them, or why do that? And you can't just have a book with four characters either. It gets very claustrophobic. And so I do that a lot, I feel like, where I know as a writer you're not... I've taught writing, so I've told students, you don't introduce a major character in like the third act of your book. You don't. You have to have all the players in there. But at the same point, it gets so flat or stale. Like new people come in. It's a little bit like life. So a movie star walks in at the very end of the
book.
That's
right.
And that seemed okay to me. But
I mean, is this I suppose the mark of a very socially inclusive personality?
I don't think of myself as a socially inclusive personality.
Or just like if you like to introduce people at parties, you like to introduce characters in novels that you write.
No, I'm the person at the party that sort of stands back and gets introduced to other people, you know. So
you're
that's
just defying all the expectations.
I think
here.
I defy the expectations. Okay, good.
I wanted to actually ask about some of the character names.
Okay.
You know, Benoit shares the surname of a certain Francois Truffaut character who appeared in multiple films.
Yeah.
I didn't spot that.
Okay.
Certainly, Harry Alford reminded me of Henry Alford, who is a guy who claims to be a funny writer who writes for the New York Times Book Review quite frequently. What of these plucking from cultural names?
It's funny. Henry Alford was just a mistake. I kept it because I just liked the name Harry Alford. But in Twins, which was my other book, I had a minor character, and his name was James Patterson.
Yeah.
And then I realized that was a major best-selling author's name, and I just kept that anyway. But Benoit Joinel, that was complete homage to Truffaut, and I'd been watching a lot of French films and just really in love with them. And so there's even a scene in Bad Marie very early on. It's in the first scene, in fact, where she just says his name, Benoit Joinel. She just likes to see his name, Benoit Joinel.
Like the scene in front of the mirror in Stolen Kisses.
Yeah, and he just says his name five times over, and I just love that scene. And so I even had a moment where I worried, is that plagiarism? Am I allowed to do that? Will I get into trouble? And my editor hadn't seen Stolen Kisses, but she said, no, that's fine. That's okay. That's what you're doing. And so that was intentional. But Ludivine. Do you remember the cat's name is Ludivine?
Yes, I do remember that the cat's name is Ludivine.
I mean, that's an absurd name because there's a French actress who I really love, and her name is Ludivine Sagnier.
Yeah.
And so she's a gorgeous actress, and so there's no reason to give a cat her name, but I just wanted to. Like, I think I like to have names to just somehow resonate for me in reasons that don't necessarily that an audience couldn't recognize. Like, I wanted people to recognize Benoit Joinel, by the way. If I didn't do that, that would have been wrong because it was too blatant that I was taking it from him. But Benoit is the name of a French actor that I really like, the first name too. So that was Benoit Magimel, and I have a terrible accent. So
I'm terrible with French myself. So we're again.
Marie doesn't come from anywhere. I mentioned this, like, the movie star's name is Eli Longworth, and a lot of people are going to recognize this because Longworth is so idiosyncratic that there's a film critic who I know, and her name is Karina Longworth. And I just grabbed that name because I liked it. And then later on, I thought, well, I should change it because that's Karina's last name. But by then, that was what his last name was. And so I just sent her a book today, obviously. I thought, well, I took her name, so I should give her a book.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I guess that's the price of payment of taking another name. Yeah. But this brings to mind an interesting idea that maybe some people don't deserve to have a name or exclusive providence to that particular name. I mean, maybe we need to have... we should write some books with Marcy Jermanski as a character.
Well, that would be
Ed Champion as a character. What makes us so egotistical to be the one name?
True.
You know?
That would be funny if we did that. I mean, Paul Auster does that, but he does that with his own name. But he doesn't do that with other characters. I guess people would get angry at you. Is that the reason not to
do it? Or you have to clear it through some sort of legal process.
Yeah,
Did you experience that with a James Patterson
I think maybe
nobody said anything?
I think Twins was too small. Maybe if it was huge.
Oh, yeah, okay.
But No. You know what? This is the first time it's been publicly acknowledged. It's never been pointed out. But I just thought, isn't someone going to give me a hard time for that? Yeah. So there was no problem.
If they give you a hard time after this conversation, okay. My apologies in advance.
All right.
I'm curious, on what experiential basis do you draw the conclusion that the French hate hot dogs?
That's from real life, in fact. Everything is interesting, what's made up and what's not made up. I have never kidnapped a baby. But I went to the Tribeca Film Festival, and Isilda Lebesco, who's an actress, she was a director, and she was at her film. And they, at the Q&A after the film, they asked her how she liked being in New York. And she said, well, I like it very much, but it's also very weird. And people came to my screening and they ate hot dogs.
Yeah.
And so I stole that from her because I just thought that was interesting. And it stuck in my head a year later. So
Did you canvass any French friends to determine what their status was on Wiener Schnitzel?
No, it was taken straight from Isilda Lebesco. She was very disgusted with Americans. And I guess I do agree that I don't think you should eat a hot dog in a movie theater.
Why not?
Nachos, I think. Popcorn is okay. I think food that has smell, I think it's too distracting.
Huh.
Yeah, I'm against
it. Well, for an art house film or for like a tentpole movie?
Even for a tentpole movie. Sometimes I've had people come in and sneak in food and bring burritos. And it's like, I don't want to smell your food while I'm watching a movie. Uh-huh. So I'm against it. I'm not against popcorn. I'm not against chocolate. But
well, what do you eat at movies?
I like popcorn.
Popcorn,
I
that's
do.
It?
Yeah. Soda, I'll get some soda. Yeah. I haven't been to an actual movie in a movie theater in a long time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But you're just doing the screenings.
I do the screenings, and they don't let you eat. But people do. You go to screenings, too.
I do.
Doesn't it drive you bonkers?
I haven't run into you, though. How can we never run into each other?
Because in the last year, I haven't figured out how to be a person that exists in the world and have a baby.
There is that. That's true.
Yeah.
Well, actually, did you visit Paris at all? Or were you just taking from... you're shaking your head. Elaborate, please.
I've been to Paris once for 3 days about 10 years ago. So that's not a great knowledge of Paris. And I really worried. And in the first draft of this book, Marie doesn't go to Paris. The first draft of this book actually wasn't very good. And Marie and Benoit go to Vermont. And
they went from Vermont initially?
I don't know why. I had them go to Vermont. And it really... And the book just didn't work. It just didn't work. And you know, I have an agent. And he read
Did you replace the jam with the syrup? Or the syrup with the jam?
The book just didn't work at all. And I think one reason why I didn't have them go to Paris is because I've only been to Paris once for 3 days about 10 years ago. And then I just realized that that's where they had to go, is they had to go to Paris. And it didn't matter that I don't know it that well myself, because I've been watching so many French movies.
Yeah.
And because I'm a writer and I'm making things up. And there are a lot of scenes with carousels in the book. And at one point I was like, is there a carousel, by the way, near the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah.
And I couldn't confirm this myself, but I went in. You can go into Google Images. And I found photos of it in the distance of a carousel on the Eiffel Tower. I'm like,
Google
that's
Google Maps Street View.
That too.
Yeah.
And so I did a lot of online research. I have one scene where Marie and Caitlin are walking. I'm going blank. What's the main street that they walked in? that leads them to the Arc de Triomphe. They're walking. Isn't that awful?
I've never been
to
Paris.
It's my book. Okay, but anyhow, I just...
That's nice excuse. You were there, so you should know
this. I was there, and I write about it in my book, and I don't have the name, but I looked it up, and I saw pictures of, like, the four lanes on each side and the cars, and I was like, okay, this is right. So you don't have to go anywhere. I mean, you have to do your research, and you have to feel confident about it.
Well, I mean, how much research did you really do? I mean, if you're making all this up, you are saying, hey, I'll have coincidences in this book, I don't care. I mean, why not just throw research out with the bathwater as well?
I mean, I pretty much did, right? Yeah. I mean, it's not a historical novel, and I've never written anything historical yet. I'm not saying that I won't. But, so, I mean, in terms of research, really all it was is that if I wrote about a different place, I wanted to make sure, like, I'm just giving myself up. Like, somebody wanted to know about me and my experiences in Mexico, and Mexico I've never been to. But I did live for a year in the Dominican Republic, and so I've ridden in crowded cubicles, and I've seen concrete houses that are only half built, and I kind of took my experience from one place and I plopped it into another place, and you just want to be convincing. But
I wanted to ask about the bathtub motif throughout this book. I mean, there are a lot of bathtubs.
There are.
One can draw the obvious symbolism, and then we have a hotel room that is missing a bathtub.
Yes.
I wanted to ask how the bathtub metaphor came about, and just about symbols in general. I mean, that just seemed to be the big, like, hey, hi, I'm the bathtub, naked newborn. No matter how much I can cleanse myself, I will still be sinful. You know?
See, that's wild to me, because I don't think in those terms.
Uh-huh.
Like, it never even occurred to me that that was what that meant, that a bathtub was it's a symbol of cleaning and being
clean. Yeah, because Marie tries to clean herself with the, you know, the people around her, and she can never quite get rid of her sins.
That is so great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You see? You're genius.
You know, but I think I take it. Like, I think you just said that, and I think that's right. And yeah. I did not intend that at all, and I never thought about that. And I was never in college and in graduate school. I wasn't a good English student because I wasn't really good at pulling out symbols and seeing things. Or I always felt like people, when you write papers, you were always putting in arguments that the writer never meant to be there.
Yeah.
And you can prove anything. And so as a writer, it's really fascinating to me what people find that I had no idea. And I think, I mean, you are right. I think, wow, I'm so brilliant because I have Marie cleansing herself of sins through the whole book, including, well, the last scene, which I've given away. If you haven't read it, she takes a bath. Sorry. Spoiler alert.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But I didn't do that on purpose. I really like to take baths myself, and uh-huh. So that might be why.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
So basically just you like to take baths, yeah. And that's why the bathtubs constantly showed up?
I think so.
I mean, was there anything maternal that felt right about the bathtub in the book?
No. I mean, sometimes it's funny to me now that Marie and Caitlin take a lot of baths, and recently I've started taking baths with my own daughter Nina, and it's kind of just funny that I wrote this book and now I'm taking baths with my own little girl, and there are ducks in the tub, and I'm like, well, this is odd because the book came first and then the baby.
Well, that's exactly it. In fact, I was going to ask you about that if you don't mind.
No, I mean,
it is rather interesting.
I've opened
you wrote
myself
this book
up
about
to that.
Sort of kidnapping a baby. I presume you were pregnant when you turned it in.
It was done, pretty much. I turned it in and then found out I was pregnant. So that was the timing of that.
So writing a novel could make you pregnant.
I suppose.
I didn't know that.
You should warn your audience.
It might make me pregnant. I don't know.
Even men.
Yeah.
Yeah. The timing, I mean, I don't want to talk. it's an interesting thing, like, because, I mean, I don't know, like, I wonder if I had a baby now, if I would write the same book, or I'd probably be a lot more upset with Maria, or I'd probably take... Like, Ellen, the character of Ellen Kendall, she has a side, but I never really felt any sympathy for her.
Yeah.
And one of the things I had to do with my editor in one of my drafts was to tone it down and to make Ellen a little bit less cartoonish, to make her more of a likable or believable character. Because, of course, it's horrible that her child got taken from her. And you can work 14-hour days, and you still don't deserve to have she didn't deserve that.
Well, the thing that's interesting about Ellen is that she pretty much disappears.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that to be rather interesting. I mean, and then Benoit, he says he's going to go out for 20 minutes, and I'm going to try not to spoil it.
Yeah.
But essentially, if these parents have their baby kidnapped, it's almost as if they want to have their baby kidnapped. I found that to be really, really quite unusual. I think this is why I'm fighting the book perverse in
my
own way.
I guess
because
that's interesting.
If I'm a parent, I'm not going to go ahead and track, you know, if I have information about where the baby is, I'm going to be on a plane to Paris and I'm going to confront the kidnapper. And so I'm wondering why there's such a lackadaisical parenting quality.
What you don't see on the other side of the book is that I'm 100% certain is that Ellen is on a plane to Paris, and that by the time she gets to Paris, Marie has already left Paris.
Yeah.
And then so she's being chased. And so when she's walking down the street and she sees a police officer and she vomits out of fear, it's because she has every right to. The police are going to be after her. But Benoit is completely contemptible on his part. You know what I mean? He really does leave his kid with the babysitter and goes off and does bad things. But Ellen, I don't think, is quite so perverse. And she's just there. And I made a conscious choice not to bring her back. I just didn't want her. I didn't want her in the story. I felt like it was enough to know that. Or I hope that you sort of had an idea, because there were phone calls and there were insinuations. I mean, and there's a scene where the phone rings with Benoit and it's Ellen, and she's like, I know you're there. And so I want people to know that she's looking for her kid, that this matters to her, and that it's bad that Marie took the kid. So it's not quite that. Well, if it's, you think it's perverse, then it's definitely perverse. But she's on her way.
Perverse, I mean, maybe eccentric. I mean, it struck me as perverse simply because there's no real reason given for why Benoit starts sleeping with Marie.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, knowing parents, not being a parent, but knowing parents, I mean, it just seemed very odd that they were so willing to just throw Caitlin to the wolves, essentially, as opposed to really reclaim her.
Yeah. I mean, Marie, in a way, I don't think of her really as a kidnapper, and a lot of people describe her as an ex-con.
Yeah.
And, I mean, she went to jail, but I kind of feel like there's that book, The Accidental Tourist.
Yeah.
I feel like she's an accidental mistake. Like, I don't think she ever committed a crime. Like, her boyfriend robbed a bank and she made a bad decision to go off with him. And I don't think she decided, well, in her mind, if she was going off to Paris with Benoit, who is the father can take his baby. That's legal. So she's not a kidnapper. And so I think she felt like she had no choice when she does. But I don't think she's not the crazy babysitter in the TV movie running around with a knife. Like, she's one step saner than that.
Yeah. But there is this odd rehabilitation quality about her.
Yeah.
I mean, and with Ellen at the very beginning, it seems very unusual to me. Perverse. Maybe unusual. I'll use that term. I need some modifier.
Yeah. I like perverse. It's a more interesting word.
Perverse.
Okay.
It seems perverse for her to let someone who she knows in, knowing of her history,
right.
knowing that she's done hard time, so to speak, and essentially without any explanation, letting her in and letting her take care of her kid.
Right.
I mean, that just seemed to me either some satirical statement of liberal guilt and obligation, or even like devotion to friendship, but it's never entirely explained. And I suppose by doing away with the character, you've done away with the explanation for how rehabilitation exists in our Western world.
I guess if you think about it, I guess because I don't think of her as a criminal for real, but she does need to be rehabilitated because she does get out of jail and she has to get a job. And I do know, because I'm not oblivious to the world out there, that there are some readers that never buy that for a second, that this woman, Ellen, would hire Marie to be her nanny. And so that kind of ruins the whole book for you from the start. And if that happens, I'm really sorry. But I think I believe it. I think in a weird way, I've got a complicated thing where she's almost family because she grew up next door and she grew up in her house. And so there's something about, like, obligation or something about how you keep giving these members of your family another chance even though they come and they burn you again and again. And I think Ellen was aware of the fact that she should be burned, and so I mean I think she's gonna hate herself so much for have letting that. I mean, wow, is she stupid to make this choice. But and there's also one line, and maybe this is even more unbelievable, but maybe Marie walked in at a good time where, like, Benoit makes an offhand statement that Ellen didn't like the other nanny, so it was a good excuse to fire one and hire another one.
Well, the nature of how bad she is in comparison to the parents, that's what I got. And, and essentially, if there is any kind of potential worldview that your novel may promulgate, it's that, you know, hey, well, we're all screwed up, we're all bad in some capacity, therefore, what's the purpose of judging other people if we're all subject to these particular flaws?
I mean, I do think that. And I think even with the title is called Bad Marie. And I for one thing, I really like the way that sounds. I just thought, oh, this is a good title. Like, it came early and I think it sounds great. And that sounded so vain. And Marie is bad. Like, there's no question about it she's bad.
You can boast about your title. It's okay.
I didn't like the title of my first book. There, it's out. But so Bad Marie, so she's bad, and it sounds good. But the whole, I mean, it's a play on words, or I hope it's a play on words, because the whole idea is that she's actually good, too.
I think
just somehow Bad Marie, it's not true. And in the end, she's good. And so, I mean, I don't sit down, just like I didn't think about the symbolism of the bathtub, I didn't sit down to start with a philosophical message about good and evil. And I think Marie is worse than most people, but I don't think most people are like shoplifters and criminals, but I think most people will go to the salad bar at Whole Foods and eat a couple cashews. Like, I think most people break little rules all the time. Like, I think there's this weird thing where everybody thinks everybody's honest and good, but then who are all the criminals out there? And so I think Marie's like a low-level criminal compared to, like, people that run governments or, you know, who allow oil spills to happen.
Yeah,
so I think
she's
not that bad. And she really does take good care of Caitlin, you know what I mean? Like, it's really important to her that she's always fed and clean and happy, and so...
Well, Caitlin is happy at the very beginning, even when, you know, Marie is, you know, passed out.
Yeah,
you know.
She is.
So, right. I guess, I mean, in terms of moral relativism and other themes, I mean, was there any kind of thematic idea that managed to just announce itself to you over the course of several drafts at all? Or did you just kind of... Keep your blinkers on and become more concerned with the prospect of narrative resolution and character development and all that?
I think I was just always trying to make the story, and whatever worked for the story was going to work for the theme, and that it's all interconnected.
Okay. In prison, Marie is comforted by a book called Virginia at Sea, and the text has in fact been stolen from another source. This leads me to ask you two questions.
Okay.
One, was any of Bad Marie stolen from a source? And two, I'm curious why Virginia at Sea had only one sex scene. It almost implies some, you know, since I'm going ahead and making all sorts of assertions about you, I may as well make all sorts of assertions about the author within the book.
Okay.
You know, of Virginia at Sea, that having that one sex scene may involve something similarly. So what of these two little minor conundrums that I'm making out of molehills?
It was an interesting thing when I made up this fictional novel, Virginie at Sea. I realized at a certain point that I was going to have to tell the story. Like, you know, I was like, you can't just make up a fictional novel and then not write about it. But I didn't know what it was going to be for a really long time. And I think in Paris, finally, she opens the book and she reads it and I say what the story is about. But, I mean, the sex scene, I felt like it was a very French sex scene for one thing. It's like there's a line about how she felt like she was being penetrated by two holes. I guess it don't seem like it only needed one sex scene because it was like the sex scene. It was like the loss of virginity, and so that was enough. Like that was sort of like a climax to the book and a climax to the story. And so, or maybe there's really only one scene in the book where I describe what happens in the book. And so, how many sex scenes can you have in that particular passage?
Well, the other thing too is that is it a virginal quality or is it Virginia Woolf? We don't know.
It's sometimes that would be great if it were Virginia Woolf and I'd sound so smart. There's a French actress named Virginie Delpy, and I like her. I like her name, and so I think I took her first name.
The one thing I actually wanted to ask you about, just from a sentence level, we were talking about how straightforward much of these sentences are, but I did notice that you are fond of the one word between two commas throughout the book. I'm curious how you developed this and how this works for you. I mean, just to give you a few examples.
Okay.
His mouth, comma, teeth. On her breast, comma, sucking. always got to start with sex since we were just discussing it.
Okay.
But it was in French, comma, complicated, comma, and she promptly forgot it.
Yeah.
It's like this sort of sneak, it's like Mr. Subliminal Man, you know, Kevin Nealon's old routine. I'm curious how this developed.
I think I really like the way how sentences sound. I think that matters to me. I think if it just sort of sounds right, so I'm always sort of interrupting the flow of the sentences or it slows things down or it makes things interesting and I like it and it's wrong in a way. And I get into a lot of trouble with copy editors. And I had this with both books where they're always trying to fix things and take things out and put in paragraph breaks or take them out. And I sometimes, a lot of commas, I also don't use the word end in between phrases. I just won't have an end. I'll just have a comma and I'll end a sentence. And it's definitely intended. And I think I'm not a poet and I don't read poetry and I feel like I shouldn't have admitted that right now either. But I think it's definitely about the rhythm of sentences and it just pleases me and there's no reason for the story and I think it's just how I like to write and I like to use repetition a lot too.
I was going to ask you about that. Yeah. The displeased waiter continued to look displeased.
I just think
we already established that he's displeased. Why this repetition? I mean, it's a fun sentence.
Okay, thank you.
But it's also very, it reminds me of a lot of, you know, children's books. I like things like that, but I mean, on the other hand, if a copy editor were to see such a sentence, they would probably reprimand you.
And I get reprimanded a lot, and I have these moments where I'm like, oh my god, the copy editor must be right, because I always think people in authority sort of are, and I take everything out, and then I get really upset, and then I put everything back, and I have this completely messed up manuscript, and then that's the point where I like call my editor, and I say, I just took everything out because of the copy editor, but I want it all back, and this has happened to me on both books, and I'm like, Marcy, it's your book, and put it back, and so...
Well, on the copy editing front, have you found situations where the copy editor helped in any capacity? Or is the copy editor generally wrong about your rhythm?
About my rhythm, I think they're always wrong, in fact. They definitely find things, and I'm pretty grateful that I have all these people looking through things and finding things. And I got a lot of my French corrected, which really helped. And they also, they corrected a lot of things that I didn't want, and I put things back, or I made up a hotel in Nice, and they went and found the name for a real hotel in Nice, and I was like, well, I like this hotel, so I'm going to go back. So I'm not against copy editors, and I think, thank goodness that they're out there, but we don't always, I mean, I've never met a copy editor, so.
They're behind an imposing fortress.
Yeah.
They never actually get out into the real world, maybe that's
right. I also write a lot of short paragraphs, and they're always trying to string my paragraphs together, and so I really do feel like they're my enemy, and I know that they're not.
Have you tried to, like, maybe ask a copy editor out to coffee or anything?
I should try that,
shouldn't I? Yeah, I mean, maybe if you were to talk with them, you could explain where you're coming from, and the copy editor could explain where she's coming from, and you two could have a nice little powwow, and maybe you'll learn some more things about each other. I mean, why aren't there, isn't there some sort of writer copy out of their society of some
kind?
There
should be.
I mean, you know, I hear horror stories all the time, and if these people would only just meet each other and have a have a cup of coffee, have a beer or something like that, I'm sure we would create more literary harmony.
Maybe. I wonder if they look at books and get really mad at me afterwards for rejecting all of their changes. I don't know.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know. I mean, you know, everyone gets mad. It doesn't have to be this way.
No.
I wanted to ask about, we were mentioning the table in the French restaurant, spreading out Marie's personal possessions onto the table, which you declare a small, sad accumulation of objects that represented her life.
Yeah.
Miss, I'm not into symbolism.
Okay.
Might Marie's life be improved by the accumulation of more objects? What of this represented her life fact?
Well, I guess she doesn't have a home, does she?
No.
I mean, maybe in a strange way that I almost envy her for something like that, because, like, I'm stuck by having a home and by having a couch and a TV, and it's not that easy to move. Though that's not what I meant at the time, but I think, isn't that how a lot of people judge themselves, by, like, what they own or where they live?
And well, some people, not everybody. But I mean, how you live is really what it comes down to.
Well, I think it's also just how exposed she was by that moment. I remember once in college, like, somebody came into my room and the door was open and I wasn't there, and they left a note on my bed and they left. And I just thought, well, you weren't allowed to be in my room and see my things and look around. And so I just feel like she was in that French restaurant, and I think she was just so embarrassed because, you know, what the things were that she had. And then half some of the things that were in her bag turned out to be stolen, and many of them were very personal, and so...
Well, it's also a very invasive move by Benoit as well. I mean, but on the other hand, shouldn't she have resisted in some capacity? Well, this jerk is just laying out her...
Yeah.
It, quite literally, her dirty laundry.
Right, it was.
You know, before the displeased waiter.
Yeah. I think it was in a little bit, she felt powerless, because there she is in another country. And one thing, I mean, this was very... It gets embarrassing. Marie gets really angry at everybody for speaking other languages, and it's ridiculous. She's in Mexico, they should speak Spanish, and she's in French, and they should speak Paris. And she says things wrong, like she'll say gracias when she should say merci. And that's me a little bit, and I know it's absurd, but I have a German husband, and I go to Germany, and everybody speaks German, and I get angry at them sometimes. I just want them to speak English.
They speak English, too.
They do. They do.
And they're also very keen to give you little German. I've been to Germany a couple of times, and they're very helpful in terms of...
Oh, they're so nice. The German people.
In terms of giving you little phrases.
I love the German people, and they're very eager for me to learn German. It's an absurd, irrational thing, and it's something that I'm embarrassed about, too. I mean, she's wrong. You're wrong in another country, too. Want people to speak your language because it's easier for you. And so that's an interesting thing about how I'm not Marie, but how Marie has things about me, because I'm a really law-abiding person, and if somebody kidnapped my daughter, I'd be really upset.
Would go to Paris.
I would go to Paris, and I would get her back, and and I would call the police right away, and I would be against it. Yeah. But we share some characteristics, too, because I don't know how you can write a book and not have a little bit. And I don't think that was what your question was. I think I went...
No. I love these, like, you know, answers that have nothing to do with the question or go in some other direction. That's what this conversation is all about.
Yeah.
I wanted to actually ask you, speaking of the self and the life, we were informed that with every step farther from the French actress's apartment, Marie felt a return to her better self. So, again, there's the theme of rehabilitation can't seem to escape Marie, and I found that to be quite interesting. But what really is the self if it's constantly being corrected by how this actor at the end feels about her presence and her presence, basically? Or even, like, you know, the scene we were talking about earlier at the French restaurant, in which, you know, she's only... represented by the possessions on the particular table.
Yeah.
You know? To sort of offer an inquiry in relation to this instead of just an observation, why is the self of Formerie so important? I mean, we get the sense that she's a narcissist, but on the other hand, because this is deliberately been told in third person, we're kind of removed from that narcissism a bit. Mm-hmm. So why should the self matter?
Why should the self matter? I mean, there's a funny line where she's in Paris, or I think it's funny, where she's watching French television and it's CNN News of the World, and she says she notes that this is the first time she's thought about anything besides herself in a long time, and then she turns the TV off. What else do we think about besides ourselves, really?
Other people. Crazy ideas.
Yeah. Well, she thinks about Caitlin. She thinks about her old boyfriend. I think she's... I mean, someone once did see. I mean, and so this is a book where not everyone's going to love it. I run Reader. I just, you know, you find things about yourself on the internet referred to as a sociopath.
And yeah.
I think sociopaths have no disregard for anybody. And I don't think that's Marie. And I think in a strange way, even though Ellen never comes back to the book, Marie knows that Caitlin's probably going to have to go back to her mother because she's not doing such a good job. She's not completely oblivious about other people. I think every day just all people in general, it's this funny thing about every day we wake up and we have to do it all over again. We still have to eat breakfast and lunch and dinner, and we still have to, like, I think every day I think of life in terms of success. Like, I successfully eaten lunch, like, hooray. And so I don't know.
Achievements.
They're just small achievements. I went to the post office today and I didn't have to wait online. That felt like an achievement. So I don't know. I think that's most people, but maybe you clearly don't think so because she's so thinking of
herself. Well, I mean, I think what I really probably wanted to get at with that really bullshit question was, why did you write this in the third person instead of the first person? Because this is very much about Marie pursuing herself, but you allow us into her universe, but on the other hand, by having that third person buffer, it allows Marie to grow a little bit and also allows us to deflect any judgment upon her decisions.
Maybe that's why I did it.
Ah.
Yeah.
I just answered my own question.
I think you answered it.
Tell me a little bit more about this.
I've written things before where I've started in the first person and switched to the third person or blah. This was always in the third person just from the start. And maybe my first novel was written in the first person. And I think when you're writing something that's so intimate about a person, I think maybe that tiny little bit of distance that third person gives you is a good thing. I mean, you're in her head the whole book. One of the things I had... This wasn't with my copy editor, this was with my editor. She added a lot of times she thought. She was putting in all these she thoughts into sentences, and I took them all out because I was like, well, clearly it's what she thought. This whole book is her voice in her head. And so I feel like this third person when writing they call it close third person. I felt like it was so closely removed to first that there almost wasn't a difference. But maybe that little bit. Maybe... This doesn't sound right. I mean, in my first novel, Twins, people hated the character Sue because they found her voice so, like, sort of, like, loud and me. And so maybe this was a way to tone Marie down a little bit. And I didn't do that consciously, but maybe that was effective.
I'm wondering if this removed voice also allowed you to, I suppose, keep your distance as an author into the full interior world of Marie.
Maybe so. Yeah.
Did you take that. Were you concerned, perhaps, about knowing Marie too well, or...
No, I was never concerned about that. And, no. I feel like, she's a character, and I think sometimes, I think life is so dull. And often life isn't dull. You know, people have these fantastic, amazing lives, but in general, I feel like we don't have these great coincidences, and I haven't jet off to Paris and Mexico, and sometimes in fiction, maybe I'm trying to make life a little bit more interesting than not. But otherwise, she doesn't seem that different to me than other people. And I lost my train of thought again. But I wasn't worried about what she thought, or I wasn't like, I don't feel like she was a psychopath where I wouldn't really want to be in her skin because it's so awful, or I don't want to maybe I do want to understand her, in fact. And so I felt like I got pretty close to...
So fiction is sort of a kind of alternative reality with which to explore the possibility of a universe laden with nothing... But coincidental run-ins.
Maybe not coincidental run-ins, but... Or I think maybe with some works of art where you'll have a character and they'll be stuck for 10 years, and you won't write those 10 years. You'll start right at the moment when something's going to happen. And so I think with all books, you want something to happen in your work in general. And I think sometimes... Interviews are funny because I'm giving away too much of myself. I've lived in Astoria for 10 years, and I haven't wanted to live in Astoria for 10 years. Sorry, Astoria. And so I don't know. It's like if I were to write a book about myself, I would probably start right before I leave Astoria. So maybe there's something in fiction where you just jump around and
But fiction doesn't necessarily have the responsibility of portraying your life.
No,
I mean, at least not.
Not
directly.
No. I mean, I really just tell stories, and I like them, and I write. I mean, I think this is a book that I would want to read, and I just happen to write it, and I think that's why I write it. And I think I don't really read philosophy, and I don't, in graduate school, like Derrida and Foucault, I just hated them, and I hated that the author wasn't dead and the author wasn't there, and I just feel, I feel like, and I love that you found symbolism in the bathtub that I didn't think of, because I think I meant it. Like, I think everything that somebody finds in my work that I didn't know I was there, I think I probably put it there on purpose. Like, I think you can't think too much about writing, and I take credit for everything that I do that I didn't mean to do. Or I think I chose third person for all of those reasons, but I didn't think at the time, why am I going to write this in third person? I think there's a lot of chaos in making art, and so you get lucky. And that's why some things I write and I don't finish, because you don't know, it doesn't always work. And so I think this one, I wrote it really fast after a certain point. I think I told you I took a break from it, but then when I decided to pick it up, I made a file, and it was called Bad Marie in 3 months. I was going to just see what I could do, and I mainly wrote this book.
It's not a self-help book.
No, I wrote Bad Marie, most of Bad Marie, in 3 months, because I wanted it to work or not, and it came really fast.
Yeah.
And, but I'm just really writing because it's the story that entertains me. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, chaos and storytelling seems a very good closing point.
Okay.
Marcy, thanks so much. It was a pleasure chatting with you. This has been a very crazy conversation. Yes.
Okay.
Very good.
All right. My heart's been breaking, just waiting around and aching for a lateral telegram, telling me how sweet I am. You swear your heart will never roam, so do you come back home? I'll wear your color.